Hello, welcome to the 11th episode of the Let's Get Running podcast. Thanks for staying with us this long. I can't believe we made it to 11. Very exciting. I'm also incredibly excited about the fact that we've only got 2 weeks left until the Olympic Games. It's going to be great. I can't wait myself. I'm looking forward to putting on a big accumulator bet, which I'll share with you before the start of the athletics events. I don't think I've ever won an accumulator in my entire life, so I wouldn't take any gambling advice from me. However, I do think Ezekiel Kemboy in the steeplechase is a surefire lock. I dare anyone not to like Ezekiel Kemboy. After the Euro 2016 debacle, I'm really excited about getting behind some top British athletes. And one of those is Ross Millington. On this week's episode, we're not talking to Ross, we're talking to his coach, Steve Vernon. Now, if you don't know Steve, he's a bit of a legend in endurance running. He has won a record 8 medals at National Cross Country Championships, which is amazing. And he also managed to surpass the legend Ron Hill's record by winning 5 Northern Cross Country Championship medals. Steve is now a coach. He is the Elite Performance Director at Team New Balance Manchester, and he's helping Ross in his preparations for the Olympic Games coming up in a couple of weeks' time. It's a really interesting interview. We talk about Steve's running career, how he got into the sport. We talk about coaching and performance, but we also talk about sports psychology and how he prepares his athletes to take on the best in the world. I really hope you enjoy. And if you do, I'd love it if you could share it with others. Give us a tweet, like us on Facebook, anything like that is always much welcomed. Well, here we go. Let's get on with the show. Obviously, you're over in Font Romeu now with Ross. How's his preparations going with a couple of weeks to go?
Yeah, really good. He's doing really well. It's after he ran the time, the qualifying time, 27:55 for Rio, we thought about the trial, the British trial for 5K. I had to sort of make a decision there that he did need a bit of a mid-season sort of break, and just because all the emotions and things, you don't realise how much that will catch up and you never mind running a hard 10K. So we shut it down for a week, jogged a little bit, had a few days off, and then decided against the 5,000 metres at the trial, even though he's in very good shape, but there was nothing to be gained from doing it. And then just built back up, and it's been going really well. I mean, Ross is somebody that thrives off altitude. We use a lot of it with him. He was at university in New Mexico for 4 years, so he had a good background at 5,000 feet, and then used the British Athletics Altitude Programme. So he goes to Kenya, he goes to Font Romeu, we've been to Flagstaff, Arizona. So Ross is somebody that can come straight up to altitude and pretty much crack on with work, and his oxygen saturation levels and stuff are really good, so he can do quite a lot of hard work that a lot of other people wouldn't be able to do that are not, you know, regulars to altitude. So yeah, he's settled in really well, things are going well, and it's just perfect up here. The weather's great and fantastic trails, no distractions and total focus.
Perfect. And his training now, I guess he's with 2 weeks to go, he's sharpening up for here. What's kind of the mileage like for him at the moment?
So he's got, in fact, I think we're looking at about 28 days, if I get my maths right, to his exact race date. So still got quite a bit of time. But yeah, Ross is somebody that regularly hits the sort of 95 to 100 in a typical, you know, training week. The work we do, we tend not to do more than 2 hard workouts a week in a long run. That's how we plan things. So I know certain groups will go 3 times a week. In a long run, we usually use 2. So it's built around 2 hard sessions, one of them being on the track, 10K specific, and then either a tempo or hills-based session, and then a long run at the weekend. It's simple work, but it works for him.
And I remember speaking to Andy on a mountain running camp a while back, and he was talking about sort of the slower, longer runs that you guys do. And it's you're not kind of clicking along too fast at those long runs, or is Ross slightly different?
No, we're not. I mean, my philosophy is about being as aerobically conditioned as you can be, being strong and robust, and being consistent. You know, you can knock weeks and sessions out of the park and talk about these great sessions and these massive mileage weeks, but it's week on week, year on year that makes a good athlete, and that's my approach, and that's what I want my athletes to get out of it. So, you know, the guys get rolling on the long runs, but it's all relevant to, you know, what's fast for a 27:55 guy is a lot different than a 30-minute 10K guy, for example. So we don't push long runs unless I want an element of threshold in there. that, you know, if they're at altitude, they'll set off nice and easy and they might get close to 6 minute miling by the end, but nothing crazy at all. It all depends on what the end goal is. And, you know, you mentioned Andy Davies, the marathon athlete, a coach there. Andy, you know, did some, his long runs were always specific. So he did long runs that involved some sort of tempo or interval based session. And we didn't just go out for a long, slow run. When he's in the cross country phase or in a different phase, his long run is just a long, slow run in the hills. And so it all depends on what the goal is for the individual. So I'm sort of going around in circles there to answer your question, but it depends on who it is and what we're trying to achieve and what I gather. But I'm not somebody that wants them to hit a long run hard at all.
And so your head coach, is that right, at Team New Balance?
Yeah, well, it's more glamorous than that. It's Elite Performance Manager, actually.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I'm a coach. I'm basically a coach. But a good friend of mine, Pete Riley, who, you know, an international marathon and cross-country runner, got a job at New Balance. And I'd been, this was 2 years ago, and I've been building my group of athletes and talking about stopping my own running because I'd got to the point where I'd realised that coaching was more of a priority to me, and I didn't think I could do both well. And Pete and I had been talking for a while that I'd love to get a professional group together. And, you know, the US model of professional teams is huge over there. There's lots of professional teams with the right resources, and they create a really good professional winning environment. And that's what I wanted to do. But it was difficult because I had, you know, coaching athletes that were based at different places and had to train at different times. So we got our heads together, and New Balance had an opportunity there for it to happen and for me to come across. So the actual team, New Balance Manchester, has been going just 18 months now, really. So it's going well.
And are you all based together in the same sort of household, same area?
Yeah, it's in Stockport. But yeah, we have some in an athlete house, and then some have invested themselves in moving over to get the coaching support. For example, Charlie Hulson lives with Tom Lancashire. And then we have Lauren Howarth close by. We have in the athlete house at the moment, we have Eleanor Kirk, Ross Millington and Johnny Meller. Yeah, the team is all within 5 miles, really, just outside Stockport. And it's a fantastic training environment. And it's got a fantastic network of off-road trails. So disused railway lines, canals. We've got the track, close proximity to airports and transport. Got really good physio support, Athlete Matters. You know, we've got a great gym and leisure provider called Life Leisure that supports us as well, so all the athletes can use their facilities. One of their facilities even has an Alter G, so for injured athletes or rehabbing athletes, you've got that there. So Stockport was just perfect, really.
How many national champions have you had in the last 18 months? It's been a few, hasn't it?
Oh, I don't know. Johnny won the 10K last year. Ross won the 10K this year. Won the English 10-mile championships at the Great South Run, so I suppose that counts. We've had some, you know, indoor medals with Tom Lancashire, Ellie Kirk. Yeah, I suppose I don't really count them up. We've had some medals anyway, but we don't rest on our laurels. We're always aiming for the stars. I want these guys to be the best they can possibly be. And so these are stepping stones along the way, I suppose.
Okay. And looking sort of back, obviously you've been involved with athletics, cross country and mountain running for a long time. What first got you into running when you were a kid?
I ran at primary school, and I was, if I remember back, it's a long time ago now, but you were just made to run around the school grounds, and there was a loop that felt like forever, but it was probably about a kilometre, and I won it, and I was told to run in the school's cross country, so 7, 8, 9 years old, somewhere around there, and I did it, but I didn't really train. And then Stockport Harriers was down the road, and a coach had come along to the school's cross country and said, you know, why don't you come along? So we did a bit at the club, but I was playing other sports and did other things, and so I wasn't really focused on it. And then I went to high school, and then at the end of my first year, early second year, there was a girl down the road, actually, that I really fancied, and she wanted to go to Stockport Harriers. And I went with her, and my coach, who has been my coach and mentor all through the years, Dave Turnbull, he was there, and he recognised me because I used to run against his son at cross country, and I joined in his group, and the rest, they say, is history. So from 13 years old, I suppose, I started running properly, but I had run at primary school at a decent level.
Because you won multiple national titles back in the past
Was there a moment you thought, actually, I'm pretty good at this and I can take this a bit further?
Yeah, I suppose there was. I'm ultra competitive. I hate losing. Really, really hate losing. And that, even at an early age, you know, I always had to climb the highest in the tree or jump the most daring part of the stream near where we lived. We always lived on the edge of the countryside. So I just wanted to win at everything and ultra competitive. But I was also, you know, somebody that liked to improve. And, you know, even being young, I started to read about other runners and things, thinking, you know, what did the best do? So I suppose from a very early age, I started wanting to be good. But it was probably when I was 16, I finished second in the English schools cross country behind a guy called Idris Ahmed. And then Dave said to me, because I was playing other sports, I was playing quite a high level of hockey, I was, you know, playing basketball, badminton, football for the school. And Dave sort of said to me, look, you can be an international now. You've made the England schools boys team. And, you know, the next few years are important. And I had to start making a decision, cutting things out, and because I was going to have to train more. So it was probably 16 years old where Dave sort of sat me down and said, you can be really good at this. And then 2 years later, I got my first GB vest and ran in the World Cross Country in 1999. And yeah, it just went on and on from then, you know, went to Loughborough because that's where you were meant to go if you were a good runner then. And, you know, learned a lot there through the likes of George Gandy and linked in with Georgie's sessions. But Dave was my sounding board. And then after Loughborough, went to on a scholarship to do an MBA for just over a year in Indianapolis. So ran in the NCAA and Dave was still my coach, even though there was the group sessions there in America. And then St. Mary's for 2 years because the Endurance Performance Centre had started there. So, yeah, I was abusing the system. I got another master's degree. So why not when I was able to do it free? And, yeah, but then I, looking back to, that was 2003, 2004 at St. Mary's. Already then I started to sort of, because I was one of the older ones, to sort of take a bit of a leadership role because there was many different coaches involved. Mitwoods had a lot of athletes and, you know, there was other guys. And I started to organise, well, we may as well all do this together and why don't we run at this time? And then I'd learned a lot about core stability was all the rage then, and especially in the US, and I'd learned a lot about that. And I used to take core stability sessions and help people out that were injured. And so I started coaching really early. I was 22 probably when I started to assist people, I suppose. And that's when I knew then that I wanted to be a coach all the way back then. And then
wow. You did a bit for Ben Pochi's LGN, didn't you, for a bit?
I did, for my sins. Yeah. But it was just, it was a way to earn money when I was down in London. But I enjoyed it. And that was coaching again. So I wasn't just elite athletes. I was interested in it. You know, Ben's group were people aiming to run their first 5K. And, you know, I had a group of younger adults working in the city. And my group got to like 25, 30 and was taking them into Hyde Park. And, you know, I dreamed up all sorts of really good sessions where, you know, we had some good guys that were running 36 minutes at 10K to women that could only run a mile. I was able to incorporate them all on loops and sessions and make it fun. And so from then, I suppose I was mentoring and coaching from an early age and earning a bit of money out of it as well. So it's funny now looking back that it's actually my career now, which is great.
Yeah. And looking, because obviously you've had some great races, mostly on the, did you say, on the mountains and the cross?
Yeah.
Do you have anything you look back on and are particularly proud of in your athletics career?
Yeah, I mean, I had, without going into all the problems, I had a lot of problems with a back and nerve-related issues when I ran on the track and the roads and basically on the same sort of surface for long periods of time. And so I didn't really do much on the track and I decided to stop running on the track because of all the problems I was getting. And I enjoyed the off-road, I enjoyed beautiful places in foreign countries. So I got into mountain running and in the Europe in the summer, they do a lot of uphill only races. So my summer season was mountain running and my winter season was cross country. So, but looking back at my greatest achievements, I don't know, because along the way, different ones that probably wouldn't mean anything to other people meant a lot to me. Winning the first North of England cross country title was massive as a senior, because that's what you looked up to, you know, when you were at club level athletics at Stockport, that going to the Northerns was a massive thing as a junior. And when I won my first Northerns, that was quite special and seeing the names on the trophy. But then I wanted to break the record of the most ever won because I'd seen Ron Hill had won four and somebody else had won four. So that's my competitive nature. Well, I've won one. I must win five now. And I eventually did. So that was another big achievement. But yeah, I was talented, of course I was, but I wasn't one of the most talented. I had to work hard for it, and yeah, I suppose winning the national was a big thing for me. But once again, I remember taking the trophy home and looking at it and thinking, well, yeah, loads of people have won it. Look at him, he's won it twice and he's won it three. So then I had to go and try and win again. And but yeah, I suppose the big achievement was winning the most individual national titles on cross country, winning eight. Well, not winning, but had two golds, three silver, three bronze, and that was quite a big achievement. And that's, and I knew then once I'd done that I was ready to concentrate more on my coaching and stop running at the elite level.
And I was going to say, was that a hard decision?
No, it's pretty easy actually, because I think I'd already made the decision, but I just had to get that one more national medal. So it was a bit of relief, I think, in the end. Yeah, it wasn't a hard decision because I was so focused and driven for the coaching. So it wasn't sad. And do I miss it? I mean, I still run most days, so I don't miss running, and I get on the track and help pace. Not the boys, I'm afraid, anymore. It's just the ladies that are pace. But yeah, I don't miss competing. I think I get the buzz and the adrenaline the same when my guys compete. So that hole in my life, you know, it's been replaced. And I love cycling as well. I've got into road cycling and addicted to Strava. So I get my competitiveness out there on Strava, on the hill climbs locally. So yeah.
Chasing segments.
Yeah, chasing segments. Sad, isn't it? But I love it.
And I was thinking, well, you kind of answered it yourself, but are you envious, obviously, with Ross now on the verge of the Olympics? Are you envious of him in achieving that and going ahead and running for his
country? No, not at all. Not at all. It's funny, you know, I'm just really proud of him and the journey we've had together to get here, because Ross was my first athlete that I really, really coached, and that's 6 years ago now. And we've been on a rough journey, you know, like any athlete does, injury, illness, questioning yourself and everything, and me questioning myself as a coach. And so it's a big achievement for him, and I'm proud of him. I mean, Ross is way better than I ever was, and I always knew he was going to be better. So yeah, I was realistic with what I could achieve. I knew that the Olympics was too far for me in terms of what I was capable of, because of the injury problems and etc. So you know, you always dream of the Olympics and things, but I suppose the target for me was, I always wanted to finish top 10 in the European cross, and I finished 10th one year, and that was, you know, that was my sort of Olympics, I suppose. And yeah, so I'm just really proud of him, and my athletes, as long as they're happy and not just happy in what they achieve, but also happy along the way, because I believe a happy runner is a fast runner. You know, you've got to minimize stress and distractions and keep things simple, and that's a real philosophy of mine. So as long as they're enjoying it and as long as they're happy, then that's the most important thing for me.
I'm really interested in like the mental approach to running. And do you spend time thinking about that? Do you try and impart your own kind of winning mentality to these guys, or is it just a case, like you say, of making them happy?
Yeah, well, it's not. I mean, it's not. You know, I say a happy runner is a fast runner. It's not as simple as that. But you know that when things are going well in your personal life and everything else, it makes running that little bit easier. And you want to minimise the stress for all sorts of reasons. But I think, yeah, I do use psychology a lot. And this last 2 years, I've realised that it's just as important as me standing there with a watch and, you know, giving them the training sessions and the plans, because there's a lot of talented people that have to wrestle with their mind. And, you know, I'm lucky enough to have met Steve Peters on a number of occasions and used him. He lives locally to me, and so I've learned a lot from him and the sort of chimp paradox theory that he uses. And I also read a lot of books on psychology, and what makes a Ross Millington tick is completely different than what makes a Tom Lancashire tick, for example. And the art of coaching is understanding the individual and me working out what they need before race. Some of them, you know, want me to be there and literally hold a hand sometimes, and you can't always be there for them. But then others, as long as they know I'm in the background and they've got a clear plan, they're ready to rock and roll. So you've got to be very supportive of your athletes, but also help them through the hard times. But also when things are going really well and the pressure starts to come because they're achieving more and more, is how you take that pressure off them and get them to think rationally rather than emotionally. And there's a lot of, probably haven't got time on this call now to talk about how I use it exactly, but yeah, I do impart a lot of sort of psychology on them and build up relationships so they feel they can communicate to me with their problems and because at this level, the margins are so small that if you can help in any way possible, then you need to be doing that. You can't just ignore it and do the training and then just hope they deliver once you put them on the track. Competing at this level is not like that. You know, it's nothing against club-level athletics, because that is the core of what our sport's about. But the coach, you know, the typical coach that you turn up at the track, what's session tonight, here it is, go home, see you at the weekend. And the bits in between, some people can figure it out themselves, but some people need help with that, you know.
And I mean, it's hard for these guys. A lot of them are volunteers. It's to have the setup.
Yeah.
Anyway, you're quite lucky with New Balance, and they come on and give you the support that you can be a better coach because you've got the time and the facilities to do that.
Yeah, definitely. And that's why we wanted to do it, to create the best, you know, most professional environment we can, a real winning environment. And you can see that it.
In terms of other stuff as well, like obviously working on the mental approach, but. Do you have much kind of say over nutrition and that sort of thing with the athletes?
Yeah. So, I mean, I read a lot. I bring in different people as much as possible. Some of my athletes are at the level where they can access British Athletic support, but I question, I ask, I speak to people. I look outside the box, so I don't just speak to endurance running coaches. I've gone and driven over to Sheffield and spent the day with Tony Minocello and, you know, different coaches from different sports. I've tapped into people at British Cycling and Team Sky because I'm Manchester based, and I ask questions all the time. And at the moment, you know, British Athletics and the English Institute of Sport are fantastic resources for me to access, and that's a real help. So yeah, from nutrition, psychology, to sleep, to altitude, to rehabilitation, to injury prevention, we're doing it all in the best possible way I can. And I think that's what's required now to perform at the best level. And athletes have got to start somewhere, and club level is perfect for that. But as they reach the international level, if they really want to go to the next level, the Olympic Games, etc., then they need to be looking at the detail, and nutrition, psychology are a really important part of that.
When you look at the way that, you know, Farah was obviously a very talented athlete. He was in 2008, was it, beating you out in the heats, and then he's joined this very professional setup where he's now, you know, double Olympic champion. He's going into, you know, Rio as the holder of the 5,000, 10,000. It shows what that kind of that approach. You need to have that kind of approach.
Or
you're nowhere, really.
Yeah, no, without a doubt. And, you can see it with the likes of, you know, I mentioned Team Sky before, but there's a reason they're the best in the world, and because of all the detail that surrounds everything they do, so that they make sure they do everything. And Brailsford's very famous marginal gains. He knows how to win, and that's what it's about. Yeah. But also, you can overcomplicate things as well. It's a simple sport running, and some athletes, if you give them too much detail in terms of the diet and everything else, it can also mess with the head. So again, that's my key to me, is how much can an athlete take on board of the details and what stresses them out. I've got athletes that work. If it's very, very difficult for them to do things at certain times of day and they have to have some flexibility, then I've got to allow that flexibility, because if it was really strict and really detailed, then it would cause them to be stressed and not be able to do what I'm asking them to do. So it is a balance.
And have you got like one little tidbit for anyone listening about nutrition, a pattern that they should follow or anything? I know there's no one had a theory with anything.
Yeah.
It's probably a bit of a bad question. But.
Yeah, well, I suppose in training, here's a simple one. If you don't recover, you don't adapt. So you can train as hard as you want, but if you're not recovering, you're not adapting from the workload. And nutrition is key to that. And whether it's getting, you know, making sure if you're a club level athlete that's having to go on the train straight from work or commute there, then you need to think about what you're doing immediately after training in terms of your recovery strategy. Because if you're cycling back to the tube and then getting a 35-minute tube journey and then the cycling at the other end and it's 1 hour, 15 minutes after your training session, before you've really eaten anything substantial, then it's not good enough. And you need to be making sure that you've got the right recovery drinks and the right fuel and be organised, that it's in your bag and ready to have something before you then have your evening meal. So I suppose having a nutrition strategy when you're training hard is key. So I don't want to go down exactly what you should be eating, because it's different depending on the individual and how much they're doing. But if you haven't got a good nutrition strategy, then you're already losing out.
Nice one. And sort of looking forward now, last couple of questions, obviously Ross is going in a couple of weeks' time at Rio. What would be a good result for him, do you think, there?
Well, we've talked about this a lot, and you know, Ross has run 27.55, and got to be realistic, a 27.55 runner is a fantastic achievement, and you know, he's number two in Europe at the moment behind Mo, but there's bigger African dominance in the 10,000 metres, and there's not many non-Africans going to be even in the race, because there's not many people that can run under 28 minutes in the world. You know, there'll be some Japanese athletes, a couple of Australians, etc. You know, there's not a mass amount of non-Africans in the race, so it's going to be tough. But we're realistic. You know, there's guys with nearly a minute ahead of Ross in the race. So we're preparing to run as fast as he can in Rio. And, you know, it's not got any heats. It's not about working on tactics, etc. It's about being in the best possible shape he can be in Rio and hanging on for dear life, really. And if we can get a PB in Rio, that'd be massive. And that's what we're aiming for. And he's well on track to achieving that. It's his first Olympics, and we are being realistic about what he can achieve. But if he can improve again and get a good experience from his first major games, then we can go into London next year, the World Championships, and look at really moving forward again in that. But Ross is now doing well at the European level. We actually decided against European champs to focus totally on the games. But, you know, he's had a fifth at the European Cross Country Champs, and now he's at that level where he can compete in that stage. And now it's getting him competitive on the world stage. So that's the next stepping stone. But if we could come away with a really good run in Rio, and if it is a fast race, a PB, that would be a fantastic achievement.
And in terms of Team New Balance, have you got plans to grow, or are you kind of happy with the number of athletes you've got at the moment?
Yeah, well, I've got in Team New Balance Manchester, I have eight athletes, and there's one athlete that I've coached a long time, Andy Davies, that lives in Wales, and because of his job and commitments, you know, he couldn't move over. But yeah, at the moment, I want to be the best coach I can be, and I don't want to take on too many athletes. You know, we're always open to taking people on, but I think I'm not going to grow the group, and because at the moment, if I'm going to coach and give the attention that the athletes require and deserve, then I don't want to grow the group too big. So maybe another one or two over the next 6 to 12 months, and you know, that's if none of my athletes, they might leave me, they might have had enough of me. So we'll see. But hope 10 is a big number to manage it when they're all competing at an international level, and you're looking at all the finer details. And
the last three questions are just quick fire questions that I'm asking everyone on the podcast. So the first one is, in your career, what was your favourite make and model of running shoe?
Well, I work for New Balance, so I've got to say New Balance. And that genuinely is true, actually, because, you know, I ran for a number of brands over the years, but I absolutely love the New Balance 880. It's a neutral shoe, really well cushioned, robust, and, yeah, it's I wish I'd found them earlier on in my career. So, yeah, the New Balance 880.
That's exactly the same as Andy Butcher, actually.
Good on him. Yep. Good on him.
Yeah. Second one is, have you got a recommended read or watch, so film or TV show?
Oh, well, I don't watch much TV. If I do, it's either documentaries, or I love my wildlife programmes. I'm a bit of a geek, so I don't really watch series and stuff on television. But I do read a lot about the sport biographies, and I love sports biographies, so it doesn't just have to be running related. But I've just read a book, actually, by Alistair Campbell. It's called Winners and How They Succeed, and that is an absolutely brilliant read. So if anyone's interested in the mind of some of the, you know, and it's not just in sport, it's, you know, people like Richard Branson, and, you know, it's a really, really interesting book. So, yeah, if anyone fancies a good read, get that one.
Perfect. And the final one is, in your opinion, what's been the greatest ever endurance running performance we've ever seen?
Well, I saw her about an hour ago, so I better say it's her. Paula Radcliffe, 2:15 marathon. You know, genuinely, I mean, there's been some amazing world records across the board in the men's, but Paula, knowing how hard she worked, knowing what she went through to run those times at 2:15, I know what it takes. You know, I coach a guy who's a phenomenal athlete that's not a 2:15 athlete yet. He's a 2:16 guy. And just knowing what is required to run 2:15 as an athlete, never mind a female athlete, I think that has got to be number one for me.
Lovely. Nice one. Okay. Well, thanks a lot, Steve, for the time.
Brilliant.
Good luck to Ross.
Thank you.
Which day are the games? It's early on, isn't it?
Yeah, 13th of August, so the 13th. Saturday, yeah.
Excellent. So we'll be looking out for him, and fingers crossed he has a great run then.
Brilliant. Well, thank you very much, nice Sean. One. Cheers.